for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right. We say what we want. Welcome. I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and new innovations in the areas of health and security for your family. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise. I'm thrilled to have as my guest today one such talented and caring professional in Rhonda Wada. Rhonda is the founder of Teen Experts, who empower teens and parents to have authentic and emotionally healthy relationships with one another. She is a coach, facilitator, and international speaker, as well as author of the forthcoming book, What Are We Really Teaching Our Children? Rhonda is also a premier show host on the Women's Information Network, hosting two shows, The Teen Experience and My Mother's Daughter. Rhonda, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. It's great to be here. It's an honor.
Well, it is great to have you. I had a chance to go to your website and to read a little bit about what you're doing. And got to tell you, I like what you're doing. But the first question that came to mind when I read it was, why did you start working with teens?
That was an interesting transition in my life. It was completely unexpected for me. I had a completely different career, very successful, and then I had what I refer to as a soul tapping. I saw a well-known self-development expert, Lisa Nichols, speak, and the very last thing she said as she was leaving the stage was, oh yeah, by the way, we're training transformational trainers. And she kind of said it as an afterthought, but there was this lightning rod that went up through my body, and I call it a Scooby-Doo moment, like, what? and I just went straight to her, and I said, I don't know what it is, but I know it's me, and it turned out that it was learning how to facilitate her original program, which is called Motivating the Teen Spirit. And so I embarked on a journey at that point that, if I had used my logical mind at all, would not have started for me. So luckily, I didn't listen.
Well, and I mean, what was your motivation to start it and to call it the Teen Experts?
Well, you know, that was also a really inspired moment. It wasn't something I sat down to figure out, but again, just really came through me more than anything else. Because when I came into this arena of teen empowerment, I have two teenagers myself. They're older teenagers at this point. They're almost 17 and 19. We really didn't have a lot of challenges because all of the principles that I now teach people, I was already using really just intuitively. And so it wasn't like I was out looking for things at that point. But what I discovered is there's a lot more stuff out there. And so after I started facilitating, after I'd facilitated a couple of Motivating the Teen Spirit workshops, I had this awareness that as amazing as a workshop as it is, it wasn't for every teen. So, you know, when I tell people that I work with teens, most of them automatically assume that that's, you know, quote unquote troubled teens, a teen that's actually failing in school or gotten in trouble with the law or is experimenting with drugs, really big things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely, as you're well aware, there's a population out there for sure that has those particular needs. But there's a lot of other programs and resources out there available to parents and teachers and counselors and other service professionals that for the teens that are more in the gray area, because my experience is that every single teen is troubled by something. It's just how much does it show on the outside. And so as I dove into this, I just realized there's so many amazing people out there doing amazing work, and most of them just want to be in their work. They don't necessarily want to do sales and marketing and do the business type aspects, and that is my background. of sales and marketing. So why not bring these two amazing things together and be able to feature them so that they can get the exposure that they need to keep doing their wonderful work in the world? So that was really the inspiration overall.
Now, how early do you think that we need to be touching on these issues with them? Because I know, because I've talked about it a little bit, from saying that I think it seems like as times change, we need to be catching them earlier and earlier. And it sounds like you're trying to get to those ones maybe in a gray area so that they don't end up falling into that category of at-risk or troubled teens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of the specific skills that I teach in order of how to approach teens, the earlier you start using these specific skills and tools, the easier the transition is, because it's not suddenly like you're going along and then out of nowhere you start using this new tool on them and then they're suspect. They're like, what are you doing? You know, I call teens authenticity o-meters.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they know when you walk up to them, if you're full of it, they know it. They're the first ones that know it.
I couldn't agree more. And actually, what you just touched on also, I think, really ties right into one of the questions that was emailed into us. And again, I want to thank those that are emailing in questions, and know that we will always do everything we can to get your question out to our guest. This question says, as a divorced parent of two teenagers, I'm worried that it is too late to improve my relationship with my girls, as we both, parentheses, my ex-husband and I, have spoiled them. How do we approach them now?
Well, my answer is it's never too late,
mm-hmm.
ever, in any relationship. It really only takes one person to transform the relationship, because any shift that you make in your way of being is going to create a shift in the environment and in the energy between you, and therefore there's going to be a change. It's knowing how to manage that and maintain that. It sounds like from the question that it's a question from both her and the former spouse, which is great, because the more that you can both realize that the number one objective is the children and really move from that position, the more success you're going to have as a family. I mean, you're still a family. When you've had children with someone, you're a family forever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, remembering that is really important, but it is never too late.
Well, yeah, and I would agree with that. But I think in tying it into that question, you were just talking about, you know, if you're a parent and you're all of a sudden are going to change the way that you've been and go, okay, I've just now gone to your website, which again, for those that are not driving can write things down. Rhonda's website is www.theteenexperts.com. They go to the website and they go, okay, I like what I'm reading here. I'm going to start doing this right now. What about the thing of the child that looks at it and goes, what happened to you? All of a sudden you think you're going to be different. How can they ease into it?
Great point. Really great point. I would say be honest. I would say, first of all, mention to them, you know, I really want our relationship to be this. This is what I'm experiencing right now. There's not as much love and joy or whatever that element that's missing for you. And just be honest. So, you know, I've been doing the best I can, but I'm feeling like there's more I could do and I'd like to see a shift. And I'm going to change my way with you. And, you know, not in this big heavy conversation thing, because sometimes I think we over dramatize simple conversations when we think it's an important topic, right?
Yeah.
We're like, we have to talk.
Right.
So
yes.
just saying, hey, I'm going to be working on being a little bit different. And the effort, the sheer effort, one of the things when people ask me, well, how do I get through to my kid? The first thing I say usually is stop trying so hard.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not a omnipresent kind of efforting involved in the shift in the parent, the shifts and changes the parent is making, then it doesn't come with the weight and it doesn't feel off. It just feels like, wow, mom's in a really good mood today, or wow, mom's really listening to me now. And they're not, if it's authentic, they'll know it, not just I'm following a formula.
Right. And what I hear you saying is start out by modeling it. If you model it first, don't try to to throw too much at them. Just start out by modeling a change in behavior that they recognize. Then if they have questions about that change in behavior, they're opening up the topic.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a fabulous way to approach it. And after all, that's how we as humans learn, is by modeling. I mean, that's how babies learn how to talk. All of that is all about the modeling, and our brains are wired to learn in that manner. And that's really actually a lot about what are we really teaching our children. My book that's being released this fall, that's what it's about. It's like we're saying one thing, but our way of being and our behaviors are showing another, and then we're surprised when they pick them up.
Yeah.
Right? that's the way we're wired to learn as
humans.
That's
right. And it really, that ties in again to another listener question that came in. And this one is one I think a lot of us struggle with. And this says, when I was a young person, I did some things that I certainly am not proud of and would not want my son to replicate. I am a bit torn when he asks if I drank, smoke, or tried drugs when I was his age. How do I balance openness and truth and communication when you want to set a good example for your child?
Yeah, another great question. Wow, love your listeners. That's a tough one, and it's one that every parent really has to choose on their own. But here's the thing. Again, there's that hypocritical element of do as I say, not as I do. And we all know that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are able to develop a rapport where you can say, you know, I did and I wish I hadn't, and here's why. And that is really effective. You know, even down from just last week, I was walking into a store and there was a mom with a couple of smaller kids, you know, probably like 2 and 4 or something like that. And the little boy had these sunglasses and he was scraping them on the surface of the sidewalk, right? So he's ruining these sunglasses. But it's making a really cool noise and it's making his hand vibrate and he thinks it's really fun. And mom's just going, no, no, stop, stop. Not ever explaining why. So when they really want to listen, but nobody likes an arbitrary yes or no, not even us adults.
That's right.
You know, we want to know, well, explain to me, why is it? Why is this not a good idea? And so, but again, every parent really has to decide, but here's what I know about pretending to be different than you are. Again, they sense it. They know that you're holding something back. And it's honestly one of the things that I think we do a disservice to our children and our teens regularly, is not being completely real with them, because what they do is they walk around thinking, well, gosh, everybody has it all together except for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're looking, as a teen, I'm looking at everybody else like succeeding in life, not talking about the challenges or problems they may not be having in life, and thinking, I just can't possibly measure up.
Yes, and the thought that I had, the same question, I was asked a similar question when I was being interviewed on a show, and it was a little bit strange for me in the sense that the host or the co-host proceeded to start talking about her love of drugs, and that the host was considerably younger than me, and she said, someday, she goes, I plan on getting married and having children, and what should I tell them about my time as in my teens and in my 20s, because I have traveled around the world and I've done a lot of drugs and I really like it, and what am I going to tell my child? Well, at that point I started thinking about just what you said. How can you be authentic with your child, but yet at the same time, I don't think that's the message you want to tell a teenager. So my question to the person asking me the question was there ever a time in which you had a bad trip, or was there ever a time in which you were drinking to where you got sick, or is there a time in which you were doing the drugs and you woke up somewhere where you shouldn't have been and you were scared? And she says, well, yeah, that happens sometimes. And I go, I would focus on those times, because if they ask you if you did it, yes, you should answer correctly. But I don't know that you have to choose to say that more times than not you enjoyed it. Let's talk about the times in which you didn't, or what could have happened to you when you woke up and you were in somebody's hotel room, or you were in an alley or whatever. So I think, and I guess kind of what I hear you saying is you need to be authentic, but you don't have to volunteer too much information. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, there's, and that is that fine line. That's another thing in our society. Like, we kind of spill our guts on the far end of the spectrum. And sometimes leaving out extra details, you know, I don't think that's lying. I think that's serving them to their highest good. But if you walk around and you say, no, don't do it, it's bad, I never did it, and they find out you're lying, you have shattered your entire foundation of your relationship.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, at that point, you know, how do you then expect them to believe you when you tell them something else that might be even more serious than what you just lied about?
Yeah, and it, you know, if there's a chance that we've had a real gift in our lives that, you know, there are members of my family that have struggled with addiction, and to have my teens be aware of that and have those people be really open and honest about the really dark place that that stuff can take you, that's been a real gift too. But to see someone that they know and love and respect and isn't their parent is really a gift in general. That's why there's that saying, it takes a village. Like, really having a support system in a community, whether it's friends or family or both, that you don't have to be all things to your teen is a real gift to them, that they can see that other adults have something to provide them in certain arenas.
I am really glad you brought that up, because I think that's a great point as well. And I know I've had that situation where we have a bonus daughter, and the boys have asked questions, and I've noticed that they have gone to her to ask questions. Teenage boys are now asking questions about girls, and I love the fact that they're asking, and she's about 10 years older, so she's in her mid-20s, but for them to now ask her and get feedback that I know she's going to give, you know, she's going to give good answers and things that make sense. They like the fact that they can get it's almost like getting some information from the other team's playbook, you know, that, you know, because she's still young. And I think that they look towards me as, well, dad's not going to know because he's older, you know. So, yeah, I think that's a great point. There's going to be family members who can also share with them, you know, some learned lessons that hopefully they'll take that in better than they will from a parent, because we know when they get to be teenagers, we are kind of what they want to rebel against.
Well, they have to. Those are great points, and they have to rebel a little bit in order to feel like they're differentiating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's it's a really interesting point. The whole rebelling thing, like, what are they rebelling against? And so there's a catch-22 between how many rules do I put in place, you know, that they need to rebel against. I call it the net versus rope. Are you using a wide net to catch them when they fall, you know, kind of like walking on a trapeze? Or do they also have a rope tied around their neck where you're actually going to hang them when they fall, because there's such strict guidelines around it? Like, I really prefer a little bit more of a net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a great thing, a great way for us as parents to look at it is that we need to provide a safety net, but we're not going to be able to just walk them through every path. They're not going to go if we're that close.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, this is something I've been wondering about quite a little bit lately, like, when did parenting become more of a never-ending babysitting job than a preparing them for adulthood?
That's a good point. I don't know. I think it's when we decided that that they have to wear a helmet and knee pads and elbow pads and a chest protector to go ride a bicycle.
Protecting them from themselves. I mean, you know, because it just, you know, not many, 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 20, 40 generations back, whatever it is, math is not my specialty. But, you know, you as a 10-year-old, you were learning how to care for yourself, why things were done a certain way. You know, now we've just turned into this, you know, people coming back home at 40 and parents that are in their 60s and 70s, they're looking at retirement, but they're still helping out their younger kids financially. Like, and these are kids that are in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And 40s. And so there are life circumstances where, thank goodness, we have those people to fall back on. But when I hear parents talk about, well, but I need to help support my kids, they now have younger kids. And it's just like, yeah, that's that. It feels a little bit too much like babysitting still.
Well, and I think the parent missed that part of what our job is. And one of the things that I have repeated, and I can't remember who said it first, but it wasn't me, but that is that our job is to allow them to become grounded and at the same time give them wings. You know, prepare mm-hmm. them for the world, prepare them for out there. If they're coming back to you at 30 years old, I think you didn't prepare something. There's something missing there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that quote too. Actually, my mother gave it to me after my son was born, and he's approaching 20 at this point. And it's something like, "There's two gifts we can give our children. One is roots, and the other is wings."
Absolutely.
I think that's probably the one you're referring to. One of my favorites.
Yep. I want to touch on that area a little bit because. Take, for instance, like it could be anything from motorcycles or things that some parents would think are somewhat dangerous. And I think that there's a way to look at it and say, especially with boys, because I have a little more experience in that area. If you have something where you've tried you believe you're protecting your child, so you never allow them to be around or on a motorcycle or be around a gun or be around anything that you've perceived as something that is too dangerous, you then have that situation when they are 16, 17, 18 years old, and they're with their friends who have learned, say, how to ride a motorcycle. Well, the male ego is such that I don't know that you're going to want to say to your friends, "Oh, I've never done this." So instead, you're going to get on and you're going to try. And that's where you're probably going to get hurt. As opposed to looking at those things that as a parent we think is somewhat dangerous and say, "You know what, I'm going to show you how to do this, but I'm going to make sure you understand that it is dangerous and that there's a lot of things you need to follow from a safety standpoint." At least then when they do get to that point and you're not there with the safety net, they're going to have learned how to handle it in a way that will hopefully keep them from getting hurt in the future.
Yes, definitely. I agree 100% with that. And, you know, the thing about completely avoiding things, like anything that's a never or always kind of scenario, if something is forbidden, it's even more enticing somehow to human nature.
This is true.
You know, so taking those steps, walking them through, saying, you know, it isn't my preference, because you still have that choice as a parent. You know, you have certain rights. You can forbid or you can give your preference. You know, there's lots of ways that this works, and there's not one way that works for every family, because we're all so dynamically different. But I love the idea of like really giving them the education, because where else are they going to get it? And at least if it wasn't completely forbidden and they've had some little taste and experience, they may not be as compelled. You know, when that opportunity approaches them, they'll be like, you know, I've done that and, you know, I don't enjoy it as much. I'm going to pass this time, instead of having that tugging and that churning inside of them saying, this has been kept from me for so long. I finally get to do it. And then something bad happening.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. We are talking with Rhonda Wada, and she has the Teen Experts. When we come back, I'm going to ask Rhonda to tell us a little bit about the site and some of the things that people can expect to find if they go on there. We'll be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back with Rhonda Wada. Rhonda, tell us a little bit about what our listeners could find if, when they go to theteenexperts.com?
So the Teen Expert is, again, designed to feature work by a lot of people in the teen empowerment industry. So the first thing that you are able to do by joining the mailing list is receive free content and information every month from our featured experts. So right now, for just special for this particular appearance on Answers for the Family, if you join the mailing list, I'm actually going to be giving away to you the last three recordings. Where normally those are just, if you register for the call, you get the recording, and that's the only people that get it. So right now we're going to go ahead and provide those to everybody. And we've talked about things like the top three issues facing teen girls. In May, Tammy Walsh of Teen Wisdom was our featured expert. The next month was Aaron Huey of Fire Mountain Programs, where he really specializes in rites of passage for teenagers, where, you know, we used to have a ceremonial type experience to say, okay, you're no longer a child. You are now an adult, and you really welcomed them into the world of adulthood. And so he really specializes in creating that, particularly for boys. And we really talked about how boys learn differently, how they see and hear differently inside of a building instead of outside of a building. So really interesting concepts on how we've just developmentally are different, boys and girls, therefore into men and women. And then last month was an amazing program called the Onan Project for Change that is taking life coaching and virtue training into middle schools across the country. So we really want to expose all of the fabulous programs out there that are going to strengthen our families and our teens and our overall our communities. So those are free every single month. There's free content and articles every month. We're working on a directory so that if you'd like a service that is in your local area, you'll be able to click on the map of your state and say, oh, I'm looking for a teen life coach, or I'm looking for a treatment facility, or whatever you need. And you can sort that either by category or by geographic area. And then in this fall, we are having the Teen Experts Telesummit, which is going to be 10 days full of multiple phone calls of experts from across the world.
That is great. Now, is there also, now a lot of that would be, seems like it's geared more towards towards the parents or the professionals. Is there also a component of it for the teens themselves?
At this moment, right now, it is mostly in terms of informationally for the parents and professionals. The programs themselves usually are for the teens, or, you know, a vast array. For instance, the workshops that I do, I have one coming up in October of my one-day workshop called The Teen Experience. So that's being informed in a level that's to the parents. The actual work is for the teen.
Okay, and now the workshop, is this an internet-based or is this live? Well, it's still live.
It's live. Yeah, this one is live and in person, and that particular one will be held in Colorado. I can do them anywhere. So if there's someone who would like to have a workshop done in their area, you know, just contact us. All the contact information is on the website, and I'm more than open to going wherever someone would love to have it. It's a really amazingly fun day, and just like with the Motivating the Teen Spirit workshops, you know, you ask teens at on their exit surveys, did you want to come to this workshop? Like 98% of them will say, no, I didn't. But usually almost 98% of them say they want to come back. Very few say this sucked. They'll go, wow, I didn't expect that to be so great.
That is great.
So get them there and we'll do the rest.
You got it. Well, I mean, is it going to be listed on the site in regards to when the next ones are going to be set up? So those that maybe can't get to Colorado, is there a calendar of events listed on the site as well?
We will get a calendar of events put up there. And again, if just because it's not listed doesn't mean it's not possible. So let us know what you want, and we will do whatever we can to make it happen for you.
That sounds great. I'm going to go to another listener question. This one says, as a professional in the field, I admire your quote about motivating the teen spirit, which is what all of us should be doing. Are you and your organization working in partnership with psychologists and counselors?
In partnership, in a collaborative sense, yes, I love to, I mean, our end game, right, our goal is all the same. And so, yeah, any input, we certainly get lots of referrals, and it's really a community effort. This is, again, I go back to that, it takes a village quote, and one person can't be all things to everyone. And so really looking for those resources that we can all bring together to have our communities be up-leveled. We have experts that are psychologists that we feature. I have a vast majority of my core mailing list is school counselors. Mm-hmm. And they love to get the content because they really want to serve their students as best that they can.
Well, that sounds great. One of the other things that I saw going to the site was you talk about how parents can adapt their communication style to match any teen's personality for maximum impact and effectiveness. Share with us a little bit about that.
Well, so take, for example, if you have a shy child and you go at them with an intensity of energy that doesn't match them and their level, they really can't relate to you. They can't open up to you in that kind of way that you're really going for. It's really like a mismatch. It's like, you know, it's like wearing two different socks or something. So it's really about that energy level and how you approach any teen, whether you are the parent or a professional or anything like that. It's more about the energy that you're approaching them with than anything else. One of the examples I like to use is, you know, if you think about a sea anemone, those cool things, they look so nice when they're free-flowing in the water. If you go up and poke at them, they close up. They squeeze tighter and tighter and tighter as long as you poke. But if you stand back and you let them open up and you just observe, then you get to see their beauty.
Nice. Nice. I like that.
Now that's the one I really like.
Now, and what it sounds to me, I mean, it sounds like NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Does that?
I suppose it's similar. I wouldn't say I technically use that. For me, if it's okay to give one of my biggest skills and tools, the number one, my favorite that I give out,
No, I said please do. That's what we want.
Okay, great. Fabulous. So ask twice as many questions as you make statements. Because number one, none of us like to really be told what to do.
Right.
Whether we want to admit it or not, you know, when I have this, I call it my little 4-year-old. When somebody tells me what to do, I kind of stomp my foot and go, "You're not the boss of me." Whether I actually did that physically or not, it's like it's happening in my mind. So ask twice as many questions as you make statements, but they're quality questions. So I actually have three components that if you use these in your questions, you're going to get 20 times further at least with a teen or really anybody than you will by telling them something or asking them what I call pokey questions. So like if you think about, this is famous for parents, kid goes to school and every day they come home and they say, "What'd you learn today?" "Oh, nothing." Or, "What'd you do today?" "Nothing." And when we don't get the answers we want, we kind of keep asking these questions, and they become kind of pokey. So I call these quality questions, and the three components that go into a quality question is, first, it must be an answer or a question that you don't know the answer to.
Right.
Or you don't think you know the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's open-ended. It's not a yes or no. You know, this is different than what time do you have hockey practice, because that's what I call a maintenance question. That's like the running of life question. So the first quality is you don't know the answer or you think that you don't know the answer. And the second component is that you need to be genuinely curious about the answer and not just the answer but specifically their answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're after is we want them to show up, right?
Right.
Like, who are you and what do you think and tell me how you feel, but we don't ask the questions in a way that really makes it look like we really want to know that. And then the third one is to have no attachment to what their answer is. There's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. It's just what's their answer. And if you have those components in the way that you ask your questions, you get an entirely different level of conversation that you normally do. I mean, teens are not forthcoming with information because they're learning to differentiate. But if you know how to ask questions, there are sometimes, I don't know if my son will hear this ever, but there are sometimes when I like do this, I ask questions and I think, wow, I didn't really have this much time. He's not stopping talking. And I love that, right? And my daughter was trying to text me the other night, and I'm like, I can't talk to you right now. Your brother's talking to me. Like, he's actually talking. Hold on, I'll get back to you.
That is great. Let me throw a couple of questions at you then, because these are some of the ones that I've used, and I think it follows along the same thing. So in place of what did you do today or how was your day, some of the ones I've used is, what was the most interesting thing you did today?
What was fabulous,
what was the most exciting thing that happened today?
So exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah. So that you're right. That you can't answer yes or no. And it's kind of harder to go, nothing, you know? So.
Yeah. And they have to think about it. And the way that you generally know when you got them is when they don't answer right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll stop and they're really actually thinking. And for some, you know, there's three different primary modes of learning: visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, which is with movement. And if they're really visual, they'll even look up to like look for the answer. They're like, oh, what was my favorite part of today? What was the most exciting thing that happened today? And just in saying the two questions out loud, what did you do at school today versus what was the most exciting thing that happened today? I mean, you can even feel the energy of it, and they just kind of open up to it.
Right. And that way it's not the same old, same old. And then the other part is, I think, is mix the questions up. If you ask the same thing every day, eventually it has no pizzazz anymore.
Absolutely. It's just routine and, oh, this is what we do when I get home from school.
Well, if you only had a chance to offer one recommendation, what would it be?
Well, that is a good question. Well, we kind of touched on it earlier about the energy that you approach a teen with, but it really goes kind of deeper than that. Because think about it, if you walk into a room or you meet someone as an adult and they're judging you in any way, can you feel that?
Oh, yeah.
So what makes us think that they can't feel that?
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, we're all so aware of the energy of a room. Like, you walk into a room, or if someone, or if you're sitting around and someone walks in a room, into the room that you're in, and they're really angry, you know it immediately, no matter if there's a smile on their face or not. This is that authenticity-o-meter thing again. But we tend to really unconsciously have a constant running judgments that are happening. And judgment is something that's either good or bad, but it can be, oh gosh, I wish they'd pull up their pants, or why do they have to wear that hat, or, you know, get the iPod, like whatever those conversations that are going on, even when they're not being said out loud, they pick up on them completely. So shifting from a place of what I call allowing, from judgment to allowing. And I don't use the word acceptance, because the definition of acceptance is more like, well, this is just the way it is. I don't like it, but I'm going to accept it. That's more like tolerating and putting up with, instead of allowing and letting them really just be, you know, who they are. And we look at things like when something is a certain way and we want it to be different, the space between those two things is what gets all of our attention and makes us think there's a problem.
Well, you touched on something. Now, how then does a parent deal with, let's use the ones that you just had, it's something, you know, their pants are hanging down below their bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been established in the family rules that that's not acceptable, and they keep doing it. So at what point does a parent deal with it from the standpoint of being able to explain a reason why, and where it's not just the feeling of the parent that feels like they have to address it because it's now a disrespecting thing. Now they're just doing it from a disrespect. And are we being motivated by the feeling of disrespect, or is it really that big a deal?
Yeah, that boy, there's a lot in there because there's lots of layers. Mm-hmm. Because I think there are a lot of things that aren't as big a deal as we make them. And everybody, you know, there's that saying, you have to pick your battles. And that is up to each person. But if respect is one of your primary tenets of your family, then and it's really established that this is now just flat out disrespect, if it's repeated, if you know, my first question is, well, what consequences have been put in place? This is just, this whole parenting by popularity contest is old, and it's not serving anyone,
and it doesn't work.
They're not always going to like the things that you set into place, and consequences, you know, this is the thing. When I work with parents, that probably the number one issue, and this starts really, really young, you know, does your no mean no? And whatever the no is, you know, whether it's just, if this happens, if you do this again, then this is the consequence. Every time you don't go through with that, they know you don't mean it. They don't need to listen because they know you're going to cave.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you start setting the precedent. If they figured out that it takes three no's to really get you to try to enforce something, then they're going to continue to ignore the first two in other areas that might be more important than a hat or pants.
Exactly. Exactly. So again, that was a really multi-layered, loaded question. and yes to all of it. I mean, and it, each one goes in a sequential kind of arena, you know, has the expectation and agreement really been set up that this is the rule in our family? You know, when you're in my presence, I, you know, absolutely no question, this is what occurs, and I expect you to be the same outside in the world, but I can obviously only see you when I can see you. You need to hold up this agreement. What consequences for when you don't? Is your word your word?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the biggest things that parents do come to me with often is, my kid doesn't respect me. And it's not an easy question to answer, but one of my first questions to them is really, well, according to your definition of respect, do you respect your child?
That's a good point.
And often, it's not an answer that we like to look at. It can be, well, gosh, I guess I don't respect them the way I want to be respected. Again, this goes back to the do as I say, not as I do. It'd be awesome if it worked, but it doesn't.
Well, and you actually just made me think of something, and I believe it was Dr. Dobson that spoke on this subject. But from the respect standpoint, that it's huge in what the children see, in what each parent, be it together or divorced, what they show in regards to respect for each other. That if you have a father who is not respecting the mother, or a mother who is not respecting the father, that is one of the largest contributors to a child deciding if they should respect you themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, this is modeling. It's the same thing we were talking about earlier. They don't learn by what we tell them. They learn by what they see. And then we get surprised when their behavior matches ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we get that sometimes with some of the children that we transport to programs, and we've taken a history according to the parent and the professionals, but then when we're dealing with the child and we're getting them to the program, we're finding out a lot of things about the parents themselves that we try to take that back to the parents. But, you know, where we'll see that the child is saying, you know, you don't understand. You know, they're having me transported to a program not because I'm doing drugs, but because I was stealing theirs. You know,
yeah.
You know, when I was getting it off the street, it wasn't a big deal. When I took theirs, now it became a big deal. You know, now it's going to be very hard for that child to respect their parents because they're now sending them away for, quote, the drug use, but yet they're doing it themselves. And obviously the child knows it if he's stealing theirs.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, that's such a beautiful point. And that's really when I started writing the book, What Are We Really Teaching Our Children? These are the kinds of things that I was looking at. And one of my favorite stories is lying. So lying, for instance. Now, every parent would tell you, yes, I've taught my child to tell the truth, or I want to teach my child to tell the truth. And when my kids were little, it was like the number one most paramount rule in the house was you tell the truth. And if you tell the truth, you either don't get in any trouble, depending on what it is, or you get in far less than I find that you misled me, lied to me, didn't tell me, whatever you want to call that.
Right.
And I think my son was about 7, and there was a couple of kids that were the same age, brother and sister, over at our house, and the boys had been outside playing on the trampoline, and I don't even remember what occurred, but they came in the house, and my husband and I had said, well, did this happen? And the two boys are standing next to each other, and my son is shaking his head going, yep, that happened. And the other little boy is shaking his head no, going, no, that didn't happen. And my son looked at this kid like he had two heads or something. Like, it did not occur to him why he would be saying something that happened didn't happen. He's like, but it did happen. And in that moment, I realized that this child, this other child, had been taught self-preservation over everything else.
Right.
That if he told the truth, he knew he was going to be in big trouble, so he was going to lie and put that off and avoid that as long as he could.
Well,
and we all, like, you know, who hasn't called their kid in sick?
Mm-hmm.
When they weren't actually sick, or, you know, had their kid hear them say, I'm not available, but we're, you know, or answer the phone and tell them I'm not here. Like, there's these things that we do that we don't think have any big impact, but they're sending these little inconsistent messages of, okay, tell the truth here, but it's okay to lie here.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And one of the ones I thought of while you were saying that was standing in the line for a movie and having the family ahead of us in the line turn to their kids and say, now remember, you're 7 and you're 11, if they ask.
I totally knew what you were going to say, because my former husband would do that, like take the kids to the buffet and go, you know, you're 10. Yeah, exactly. Great point. Yeah. And there's, you know, we don't think twice about them, but there's all these, we're sending all these mixed messages and wondering why they're confused.
Yeah. And one of the things that I'm very proud of is that we've had situations at my house, and my house is one of those places, it's very much a boy house, and so the other boys in the neighborhood, their friends come over and play in the pool, and we got a big backyard. And at one point, they were playing a game, and something hit a window. And so I came outside, and I said, is everything okay? And I said, I think somebody, you know, threw something, and, you know, and it hit the window. And the boy that did it went, no, 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 it wasn't me. It wasn't me. And one of my sons ran over and grabbed him and covered his mouth and said, do not lie to him. Okay? It's okay. And my son goes, Dad, it's okay. We did it, but it didn't break. You know, my son started explaining to the boy, and he's saying, you don't understand. If you lie to him, it's game over. We will not be playing anymore, you know, and you will be going home, versus if we tell the truth, there may be a small penalty, you know, or we may get a lecture that says, don't play in this direction, but we're still going to get to play, you know, so yeah, I think it's important, you know, as you say, it is that we don't want to teach them to lie. And I love the fact that my kids are, I've observed them make other kids not lie in our home because they understand that the penalty is far greater.
Yeah, exactly. That's a beautiful story.
So, and yeah, I just glanced at the clock and I cannot believe it. We are almost out of time.
Oh, wow. We are.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is, real quickly, can I have you come back? Can I get that commitment from you?
Oh, I would love to.
Oh, good.
Yes, anytime. I would love to.
I would love to. Now, is there anything that we missed? Is there another biggest mistake, maybe other than the lying and stuff, that you would want to warn parents against?
Wow, there are so many. I don't think I'll go for a mistake. I think I'll give another tip. And that is actually using quantum physics to your benefit in your parenting. And this works for teachers and counselors and anybody else who's relating to really any person, but particularly teens. And that is using what's called the observer effect to your benefit. The observer effect is a principle in quantum physics that says an atom changes its behavior based on if it's being watched, and not just being watched, but what's being looked for. So when you are thinking about looking at your kid, that kind of thing, are you looking for something to be wrong, or are you looking for what's possible and who they can be, not just who they were yesterday when they made the mistake, and so you're looking for this mistake again?
That is great, and thank you. That's a beautiful way to end the show. Let me just remind everybody, if you need to find out more information or you want to get a hold of Rhonda, it's www.theteenexperts.com. If you're driving and you can't write that down, you can always go to our website, www.answers4thefamilyblog.com. Send us any information. We will get it to Rhonda. Rhonda, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
All right.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
The source.